You good to go?
I'm good to go. You good to go?
I'm good to go.
I'm good to go. And I'm Matt Robinson.
I'm good to go and I'm Noah Bissell.
J.K., you good to go? Play the music.
No, no, for real, man. Are you good to go? Jake?
I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden, it will all become lovely. The flower that opens in the morning light.
Ooh. So, a lot to talk about today in a pretty short amount of time. But on the Jake Hill note...
That would make this a jam-packed episode.
Yes, packed full of flavor. But I got the word online that our precious Jake Hill Pizza Man shirts that I ordered and forgot about, like, right after we talked with him, you know. I don't know. They've been in process for a while, but yeah. Hopefully next time I'm on this mic, I'm going to be wearing that Pizza Man shirt.
Pizza Man,
and you will,
Jake
too, because you know when they come, we got to wear them together, stepbrothers or something.
Music starts playing. Yeah. Randy Newman just inexplicably plays out of nowhere, and we're skipping around Milo in our Jake Hill Pizza Man tees.
Yeah, yep. That's definitely a world I want to live in for sure.
Not for nothing. After getting used to a world where... everything is on demand and you order packages and they come to you in like 48 hours. Mm-hmm. It's literally been a trip. Like,
72 will piss you off.
Not now. Yeah. If I can get 72 days right now, it's not the worst thing ever. The way that shipping of all kinds has, we had to.
Thankfully not on beer supplies.
Preach that.
For straight up. I mean.
Yeah.
So.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But even we had to, we'll get into this a lot, but opened up the tap room, the patio of the tap room this weekend.
And it's not that important, honestly, but I have been doing stock, so I went. That's exactly what I want to talk about.
But we had to get take a section of fence out to have entrance and exit right through the patio just for flow. And even him getting a panel of fencing. He's like, everything's been on back supply. Can't get anything shipped. It took forever to come. And then the day before yesterday, 12 hours before we opened the thing out, he just comes on down with a sawzall and just, he's like, we didn't get the gate. We're cutting out a panel. And now you've got a place for people to get in and out.
I was going
to
say, dude, if that guy calls himself a fencer, how about build some fence or taketh away the fence?
Fence was tooketh away.
Good. The good fencer buildeth or wait for packages that don't come, and the good fencer taketh away. But yeah, man, I mean, that's tap room's fucking open.
That's front of mind.
I mean, come right on, yeah. Dude. Day one behind you now. Talk to us about it.
Absolutely. Getting something like this going, it's so weird. The big takeaway for me through all of this is how quickly we get used to what is. Mm. It's why literally the stereotype is the new normal. And as much as you hear now, stupid it is, we as
it's stupid from how normal it is.
But we know? As like something, our ability to adapt to something, and I don't mean that just in the positive way, it's like a resourcefulness, but our ability to almost become complacent with what is and just be used to it so quickly. Mm-hmm. It feels like the last time that we were operating in a true normal taproom sense was 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
100 days ago, easy.
About that.
Yeah.
But getting back into it and kind of falling into that, like, we're a delivery company or we're a curbside company. Even like getting the head around being a tap room again is more like
to get an identity, huh?
There's more
identity is more fluid than you're making it out to be, I think.
Identity and agency we're going to talk about today, but really the mental rustiness, even of like
I can imagine
setting up a new plan. All right, it's going to flow this way, and this was good. Like we spent a lot of time doing it, like take it very seriously, and I've kind of been drumming on this for weeks, truly. But even some of the initial ideas of like how this could work or what it could be, to then be open yesterday and see it and see how far away, like the initial plan was from reality. Uh-huh. You get what I mean?
So before we get into the reality, sure, tell me about some of the far-fetchedness, retroactive far-fetchedness of some of the totally plans early.
So what, so like in theory, what sounds like a great idea, you're balancing these things like A, there's just the optics of what you look like, right? The
Tom Clancy.
The optics of how clean, sanitary, and different you're going to be to put people at ease. And you know there's going to be people on each side of the fence. First,
literally.
We'll get much more into that, to the missing panel fence. You've got people on both sides. But you
it's like
do,
the outsiders, wrong side of the fence, wrong side of the tracks.
Come out and play. Yeah,
that's Warriors, we buddy.
That's the second time we've done this. But in doing that, you very much kind of first thought is, we're taking this very seriously. We're going to provide you a safe place to have that sense of normalcy and enjoy us again. And so it's kind of safety and
like a new normal.
Like a new normal. Uh-huh. Safety and caution becomes totally front of mind. And then you kind of work backwards from there. With
pretty hard when you live your life by throwing caution to the wind.
Am I right? So to speak to that, some of the original plans, and it's kind of tough without knowing our space as a listener and seeing our tap room, but we have what is truly a massive patio. It's probably 150 feet.
In relation to the size of the building and relation to being in Milo.
Yeah,
I mean, there's patios like, it ain't no German beer garden.
No.
You know, but
for the area, even for for Maine in some sense, I mean, you could comfortably seat 125 to 140.
It's probably about 30 by 120, 150.
I was going to say 150 by 40 would be my guess.
Yeah.
I've measured it once. No, I don't remember those numbers, but you could comfortably seat over 100 people, and it's got there's a friggin' train car out there. Like, it's very much from what people are working with right now. Like, you see some tap rooms and restaurants that are like, all right, we're taking 11 parking spaces and making them packed because you have to be outside right now in Maine. And that even got pushed further from July to August. You need to have an outside space to have people, no indoor service. So with that being said, and thinking about that, we have an outdoor kitchen out there. It almost is like a shack.
Snack shack.
It's nice, but it's a shack or shed size, and it's all nicely paneled. And we used to have people come do third party food out of it. It's a commercial kitchen out on the patio connected to the building with a window right to our bar that we would have people cooking out of. And an initial idea that made a lot of sense from that safety and optics standpoint, I was like, oh, we could have somebody in that outdoor kitchen that has like a big garage bay kind of window, huge. We could serve the beers out of there, keep people out of the inside. And it even shows something totally new and a new flow and process that we've thought of to keep people distant. Funny to say that way. You're going to have people get into a line to come to your little window and thinking that, no, but that'll be distant. And then it's got a window right to the bar. So we'll have a person at the bar pouring beers, handing it through a window. So two people touching a glass instead of one to get into the kitchen. And then they'll serve it out the window. And then that'll keep everybody outside. And I was like, oh, this makes sense. And then we'll have somebody who needs to be seated at the entrance the entire time. So right there, this grade will cement three people to the ground in one specific station, two of them 7 feet apart from each other to pour a beer, pass a beer, and take the order for a beer. And all of us were kind of on board with like, this makes sense. And then kind of the way this process goes, you come up with a plan and then realize pretty quickly, like, I can poke a million holes in this. You know what I mean? So you kind of rethink it, reformulate it. And then the reason these things are things in the first place, it kind of all came around to like, wait, there kind of is a model for this. It's a restaurant. And it's got a host stand and it's got servers who come.
It's the shitty tables at restaurants that only get drinks.
That make you no tips and no money. That's what we'll do. And once we kind of like tossed up a couple plans and ripped them up, and that's a model for a reason. You know what I mean? And that's where we landed very much there. And then even when you have customers kind of coming up and there's signs and keep your distance and 6 feet and wear a mask and they're kind of, they're stepping into this new thing with us for the first time.
You matter. We love you.
But that, even that becomes so much easier to communicate. You know, like when,
with signage?
No, just like, so think of, it's going to be different. People have come to see us before and know what everything is about and then are coming back for the first time. Think about it like a regular restaurant flow. Yeah, so we're going to seat you. We're going to have a server's going to come to your table, as opposed to like, so listen, line's going to start in the back left corner. You're going to be coming up. There's going to be a window at the kitchen. Just all this new flow that they, you're in a restaurant now. Come on in. We're going to seat you at table six. Britt's going to take your order.
Yep.
So that's kind of where we landed. Had day one yesterday, and all in all,
a foodless restaurant.
A foodless restaurant.
Yeah.
Food's in the parking lot. Yeah. You
get food, but we're not bringing it to you.
But all in all, opening day went very well. There was even a rainbow after. So
there was the rainbow.
God thinks we did a good job.
Yep. Something does. Some omnipresent being
the
does. You know?
The simulation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. The simulator that believes it was good. Yeah, I got here not too long after the rainbow started. I got here, you know, as close to close.
Mm-hmm.
And it just had no, like, anyone, you know, there is a type of excitement because of the truly unknown. It honestly reminded me a little bit of how I felt opening weekend here.
Yeah.
New place, new area, like, there's never been a brew, like... I think that this will be busy, but I have no ground to stand on to say that.
Yeah.
And I felt a lot like that, like a certain
unknown
Christmas
is the
morning
word,
is definitely not the term to use, mm-hmm. but just an excitement towards the unknown of like, I wonder.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, rolling in and seeing the full parking lot was a thing that I've not seen in a really long time.
Yes.
For one, shout out to my dad for,
Making the new
the parking
lot. Shout out Jensen.
No, he hasn't learned paving skills. He just put up some barriers. But
and coordinated.
Nonetheless.
Coordinated.
Yeah, parking lot coordinator. Parking
there
lot supervisor. yeah, just a cool sight, man. Very cool sight. I didn't poke my head into the service here. Also, because of all the new structure, I like also just kind of wanted to play it safe, like not bust in. Like, I'm doing something egregiously wrong and not realizing it.
We've got three people serving in hazmat suits, staying 6 feet away from tables.
They're rolling around like in a giant hamster bubble.
A remote control car comes out with your beer on top of it to the table.
Yeah,
and
your
Noah
drone
comes bounding out to people, say, hey, it's been a while, am I right?
Which is not quite what I would have done, but safe than sorry.
And that's the other thing is obviously there's a weirdness to the gloves and there's a weirdness to the mask primarily. But all in all,
it's like a cool Halloween though.
Debatable. It does. I don't hate it. I get to cover up my face and let my clothes talk. So I feel I'm walking around like I'm Ryan Gosling with a mask on. What's up, baby?
It could be
these
Gosling
baby,
these, underneath.
These
or
baby
no one
blue
knows.
Eyes
yeah.
see you. This red beard, you don't.
Shout out Aisha.
That's who I'm talking to, baby. She's been gone for a month. She totally forgets what I even look like.
Yeah.
So I get to roll up on her like that now.
You're rolling up on her masked when you pick her up?
Masked with peonies in hand, so it'll be good.
Peonies.
And peonies are a type of flower, her favorite flower.
Oh.
I got some from the peony plug.
Oh,
pick
cool.
her up with from the airport. But no joke, I will have a mask on when I pick her up at the airport because of anywhere.
You don't
on,
know what kind of shit she picked up.
And just on anywhere on earth where I'm up pretty good with a mask. You know, I throw it on. There's definitely times like shoot to the gas station or shoot out of the house for a second. Like, oh, shit. And it's still Northern Maine. I'm not scared to death. But you put it on to put it on. I'm in an airport in Boston. I might have two masks on. Of any way you'd want
to
be.
Oh, do you have to go into the airport?
I'm going to just because I got the peonies. Why
you
wait?
Got the peonies. Why,
I
want
to give her that, like, come
well,
down.
I think you don't have a choice then.
Come down,
I didn't
yes.
know you're going inside.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're doing that.
Double mask.
I don't think you're allowed to not wear a mask in
makes
the airport.
Sense. That's right. Of all the places on earth, that's
yes.
the one.
I don't think you're alone in thinking
imagine
that an airport's
being an
anti- a Jeremy
imagine
place.
Being one of those people that gets upset, like, anti-mask, or you're imparting, and I don't want to make this political at all, but like you're imparting on my freedoms and da 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 in an airport. Like anywhere else, I even get some of that. in an airport, I got to think everybody on Earth wants a mask on.
Let's talk about that, though, real quick.
Hit me. No, but like what I found yesterday.
Yeah.
And to some degree, but and we already know it. It, for whatever reason, it has taken on this political connotation and is a very divisive issue. So my stance isn't that firm anyways. So I don't want to like alienate or piss off any listeners and getting too deep into it because I truly am not hard on one side of it.
Friggin' snowflake.
But I am on the side, like, I just think the risk and reward is so, there's no downside.
It'd be a stock I'd invest in.
Very
if
little.
If that was the risk balance.
My Robin Hood would be blinking with that analysis.
With that beta just, analysis, sign me up.
I do understand where the freedom sink and how people could be in that camp a bit, but the risk of wearing a mask is so little that even if the reward is not, even if the reward is only,
there's well, a, what's the reward? Not having a mask on your face?
No, to like what it could do to prevent you from catching this virus. Like,
the risk of wearing one.
Yeah, what's the downside of putting a mask on? I think in a small window, it's almost zero. If we're going to be a mass society for a year and a half, well, I've got some issues with that too. You know what I mean? And can that, I think you can start to lever up to.
Because by that time, like you will be in such great shape that you'll want your face to be shown.
Listen, I've done good now. I need this thing off. But really, like if you lever, you could lever that up to, I could, to understanding now we're into a place that does.
A V for Vendetta type
and
of place.
Freedoms, though. Does it? Yeah. If we're a mass society for a year and a half, there's some freedom constitutional element at play. For a couple months during a pandemic to put it on, even if there's a 2% chance or a 7% chance that it lowers.
How about a 3.5% chance?
Transmission. What's the risk reward is just.
Yeah.
Why not do it?
Why not?
And then it goes on too long. Well, listen, I don't want to have a mask on my face every day. I don't want to be able to not
getting a rash
see the people. Like that's how as humans, like every we're wired to just ding.
Yeah, it's so
take
weird.
Apart faces. That's where we get
cracking
so much
jokes at work and stuff. And like, everyone's in. It's. You take for granted how much a mouth shows.
That's what I'm
because it's like, you'll make a joke and like or whatever. Like it's. Something that's supposed to elicit some type of response from someone. And they did have that response, but you can't tell.
Yeah.
You just see eyes that are looking at you in the exact same way they were looking at you before you said the thing.
And this sounds
maybe
like
a tiny bit squintier.
This sounds like a bit and it's funny, but it's exactly what you said. No, like the eyes are the window to the soul thing.
Nah.
I believe the absolute lie. Yes.
It has totally false.
It has an awful lot to do with the cheek muscles and the lips and the nose muscles.
They're like one of the panes in the window to the soul, but they are not the window itself.
Without those, the eyes are just eyes, and you can't tell me much with those alone.
No.
I'm glad we did a mask deep dive. Got to throw that in there.
Well, one other thing on the mask deep dive is I was talking with Dad yesterday, a few days ago when we were driving up to pick spruce tips, which is a lot of fun and kind of, you know, I'm a really caring son. What I do for my dad for Father's Day is make him drive with me 2 hours away and do
to get adjuncts
for your beers. Moose fly infested wilderness to hand pick spruce tips for my business.
At least it's
so that's the kind of son
exactly.
I am.
Exactly. At least
you know?
It's a thing where it's like a tiny bit of squeeze for a ton of juice when you're picking spruce tips.
Yeah, like you get those buckets just fill up so fast. Yeah. No, but for real, we both had a really good time.
Shout out Jensen.
And yes, and second shout out, he's doing good on this podcast. But we were talking about it and it dawned on me that there's a bit of a contradiction kind of in the mentality of you're infringing on my freedom by going to a business that by design that is the freedom of, you know, whether it's a very like I don't really know the term, whether that's hyper-capitalist or even like a libertarian almost society of just a business, if anything, has the right to choose what their customers need to do.
Yeah.
That's the – those are like hand in hand, yet they're not seen that way at all by people that get outraged of like I'm not telling you to wear a mask. No one's telling you to wear a mask in your home or doing what you want to do in your own time.
Yeah.
This is a consumer – experience you're at.
Yeah.
That's the definition of when it's you're, you know, we're not in your world anymore.
Yeah,
you're coming to our world.
Yeah.
A, businesses don't have the choice in the first place. So maybe that's where some of the sentiment comes from. But what do you want us to do? Lose our fucking business just so we can fucking put some like ill-informed foot down?
Yeah. You know? 100%.
It just seems to be contradictory to me.
There's
for
a
sure.
weird, and the one last little cherry just to put on yours and not to dive all into it, but was listening to an evolutionary psychologist just yesterday on a podcast and made the point that I'd never even
F-psych
thought of.
Is what we call that, that in the industry.
This F-psych said that if 9 months ago you had asked him, a global pandemic is coming and it's going to get very politicized and just kind of.
First, I'd start that with weird question.
But you would very much think that conservatives would take that very, very seriously, and liberals and progressives would be the ones that would be aloof, isn't the word, but would be more open about it and
be liberal about it.
Be liberal about it.
I think that's an old school understanding of really what those terms
he
mean.
He certainly wasn't, because I agree with that.
Once clearly he's smart.
And that's why I don't want to get all in, because once he broke it down beyond face value, I was like, oh shit, he's right. You know, and it just, I hadn't even. Hadn't thought about anything remotely like that. And then for it to be as politicized as it's been the other way is unbelievable at times. But that's our. That's,
I wouldn't.
No,
think
and
that
that's mask hour.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's different. It did. To me, it made sense in that.
Yeah. I'll bit check it out.
Having somebody probably a lot smarter than myself tell you about it, I think it would make more sense. I'm not going to give you any of the whys, but I heard it on a podcast.
Yeah. But. But yeah, to go back to, I don't know, just a good first day. It seemed like vibes were fucking high. You got another one coming up today.
And absolutely. There is one other last big takeaway is kind of what we out here being in Milo, it's rural. It's very different.
We out here.
And other places, these little things you can do, and it all just starts kind of macro and culture and just the way you view it and approach it and think about it. But these little things you do that elevate an experience and make it different and make it have its own personality and all the things, the intangibles that
like
make
a non-working train car that you can have a beer
the
in.
The intangibles that make a place special.
Yeah.
The things you can't measure. It is doing that in this environment with these
masked
rules,
up
with a mask on with this
loved
with,
up
you it's like trying the experience part and creating like a memorable experience you feel like you're doing with like two hands and a leg tied behind your back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And from where you have even to the train car, which we still have, and different things like
put
that.
Put a mask on that, right?
But it's closed. You're not going in that tight, narrow 4 foot
the
space.
Metaphorical mask.
Put the mask
on
that
car.
Door. You're not getting past. Yeah. But it's you just feel like you have less tools to do that. And really, so it becomes
you have a less mouth.
All you really have now is your like the personality and the trying to give the extra.
Pretty much all you are
attention,
is personality.
But it's just it's that part walking away after the first day is the big thing taking up mental space. It's like how can you differ from anybody else that has a patio and is doing similar flow, similar thing in this environment when you can't get that close, you can't touch or talk too much. It's just been a weird feeling that I wasn't ready for. That makes it sound bigger than it is. It's just that's where the brain has been a lot lately. How do you elevate this thing with so many rules?
I would just argue that yes, of course, that is a fundamental
mm-hmm.
goal that any business should be striving for,
mm-hmm.
but I would say that it probably matters less than it ever has in this moment.
I totally agree.
To elevate, like, people are just fucking happy
to be out. I totally
agree. And like, it's not like we regress to the Stone Age
in terms of
what the overall, like, you know, positivity factor or whatever, because that's definitely a real term.
I like it. You've been spending a lot of time with me.
Of the whole experience, though, you know, just the aggregate of it.
Yeah.
It's not like it went down to nothing
and then we're trying
to build it back from zero. Yeah. So I don't know. I personally, as just advice, would not worry too much about
it's not
that.
It's just a funny feeling. And it was
how about wear like a cool mask? Like, that'd be one way to separate. If you're worried about separating yourself and being memorable, it's the color of your gloves, and it is the amount of kind of what's it in Office Space that Jennifer Aniston pizzazz?
I don't remember.
Spirit? I don't know. It's something like that. The like five people that are hearing this will be enraged.
Yes!
They'll be enraged. It's fucking Juju, fucking
yesterday.
Idiot. Yeah, or whatever it is.
But speaking of memorable, one last funny thing. So, and the way we did some of the differentiation before, and this isn't to blow a horn or anything like that. It's very much a small town and less volume than Portland. So out of the gate, when it was certainly slower and you're trying to build this thing 2 years ago, our simple like willingness to engage beyond the normal boundaries of a taproom or restaurant experience. And I mean like from having customers in our phone or texting and like, hey, can I text you to see when this beer is coming up and exchanging numbers and just kind of growing like a real relationship with some people. You know what I mean? Was one of the tools that used early out of the gate. Now, because of contact tracing and everything like that, we have, when you host somebody and take them in, you have, you kind of create a customer for them that'll then be saved in the system in case you've got to keep it for 22 days in case we need to contact trace. Oh, they were here on the 21st. Boom, I can look up who was here on the 21st and you save their name and number and that.
For corona tracking?
Yeah, for like contact tracing. But the point being, I have all these people that like have literally texted through delivery and some of them we talk to in the DMs or the messages, some of them literally text my phone and they'll park and I'll see them walking up and I'm going, oh fuck. I'm supposed to know this guy. I've waited on him 100. I know him by faith. I really know.
You know the person.
Him or her. I know if you have a family. I know if you go out on your boat on Lake Sebec or if you have a place in Greenville or what. I know who you are. But I don't know your fucking name. And you're going to walk up here and I'm going to have to do this whole spiel about how it works now in a math. And then I'm going to have to go, oh, and by the way, bud, that I texted 3 days ago and talked to. What's the name again? And you can literally, and some people, you know how it, because some people.
Their eyes will look up like.
Well, they think like, oh, that's why they, some of them, that's why they come.
The familiarity.
Britt or Maddie or Justin, they like, I'm special there. They know me and da da da. And like, hey, bud, what's the name again? And you can watch their eyes just go. That's the one time the eyes, so that is the window to the soul.
When the eyes
when
are
you
disappointed
ask
them
and
their
sad. Name,
the thing is, though, dude, like, and you and I both know this, like. It isn't about the name. Like, and I honestly think that there's probably an inverse even relationship with people that are good with names and how much they actually
don't give a fuck
know about the person. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm kind of the same way as you, or like I have a good memory of cataloging things about people.
Yeah.
But their name isn't escapes one of the parts me. Of information that I'm holding on to. I can remember where you're from, what your experience was like in high school, what your fucking girlfriend's father did in senior year of college, but don't fucking know your name sometimes. And that's understandably weird. But I think a lot of people operate like that.
Totally. But and it's not, it's a funny like anxiety point. It's not like a true terror.
I know you're not actually, but
it's
interesting.
I've developed this thing of like, kind of almost even like you were just joking and mimicked, but like quickly asking for the name. We got new system, got to do this. Name again. And then as soon as they start to get into the first name, like as soon as they get the J out of Joe, I'll be like, oh, of course. I mean last name, need last name.
I mean your dog's name.
That's been my go-to for it.
That's pretty
good.
That
part has worked pretty
good. I was trying
to
think when you were talking about that of ways you could spin that, but I figured you already had me anyway.
That's my go-to right there. And with that system, I've only seen about two very, very sad eyes. Mm-hmm. But I've seen two of them.
One,
two being four.
Or,
two being four. So after a day of letting people down and seeing the sad eyes.
But seeing a rainbow then to remind you that it's okay.
Standing in the hot sun with a mask on, dealing with only a couple customers that were furious that they had to put a mask on just for the 11 feet till they get to the table.
At a business they opted to give money to.
And when you get to your table, I don't take that thing. I'll throw it in the air 100 feet like it's graduation day. I don't care. But from here to there.
Not a good look also, just as a business owner.
But just put it on here to there and don't freak out at me about it. Because guess what? I've been standing here in this mask for 8 hours in the sun. After a day of that, getting done, and third time shout out, getting to your going to Jensen's house to hop in the pool because he offered it once, and now I'm just living there in his pool, baby. Jensen wakes up in the morning, looks outside. I'm just on a float hanging, dude. Going to your dad.
It's a little early in the morning to drink Mai Tais.
Margaritas. But anyway, speaking of margaritas, after that shift and hopping in your dad's pool to cool off on a what was a scorcher of a day, especially late in the day yesterday in Milo, I had the closest thing to a beer margarita I'm going to have. And that's a...
Other than a Bud Light Limerita or whatever that's called.
That's too far away from beer. That's not...
Fair,
that's not beer.
That's just a bad margarita.
A salted grisette with lime from Oxbow called Surf Casting. Oh my God, did that thing set me right last night. One of my most recent, like, big favorite beer drinking experiences.
Yeah, you and a lot of people and me also. Yeah. I haven't had it this year, but I drank a fuck ton of that last year. Greg at Beer Cellar.
Can you drink a lot at once? I very much...
Well,
I never
have more than four of them at maximum because that's the thing they come in. I've never put it to the test, let me say that. I've never tried to session it, really.
It'd be a one and done beer for me. Have just that bit of saltiness.
Carbonation.
And that what it is, but that... Then I'm switching to juice. No, but that... As a one beer.
I opened this New England IPA last night so all the carbonation would dissipate. Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that?
No, I'm what just saying. You said that to me once. You know, I was just repeating
that's
it.
That's how I drink them. But seriously, that beer, oh my God, did that set me right last night. What have you been drinking lately?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of Greg's of Beer Cellar.
Yep.
Episode 12.
Greg
maybe
Norton.
Listen to it, maybe don't. Mm-hmm. Also, Hester. Probably her favorite beer, like at the moment as well.
Really?
Yeah. She's a lot of Surf Casting fans. And I, yeah, like I say, I'm one. But for what I've been drinking, nothing that I really need to fucking step my game up. Part of it is just a mentality that's creeping in of like this almost thinking that it's more arduous than it is to go to a store.
Yeah.
And it's not, but it's something has shifted a little where I'm just less.
I'm
going to stores, and it's not from a fear thing at all. It's just, it's not in my routine as much to just pop into Beer Cellar or wherever it is and load up on some stuff. Also, I told myself that I was like, I have all these fucking cellar dwellers. This is a great opportunity to
clear
crack
them
away
out.
At some of these. I haven't been doing that
I'm cleaning
at all.
Out my cellar.
The one recent time I did that, so mostly it's been just a lot of 12-pack beer, whatever that is. I'm the statistic, like we talked about in consumer shift of behavior. Yeah. But was a Cool Ship Balaton from Allagash. That's one of their.
Is that a semi-pro fighting league?
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
seems out of Rob Todd's purview.
Well, dude, I mean, you'd be surprised by the amount of people that train jiu-jitsu.
Well, that is true. That it actually, I'm buying it.
But no, it has nothing to do with fisticuffs. It has everything to do with stone fruit.
Ooh,
and that is a Balaton cherry.
Balaton cherry, yeah?
Yep.
I never heard of it, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's one of the only cherries that gets put in beer. So, but
thanks.
Granted, not in a shaming way, just... Montmorency and Balaton are like the two main American cherries. Anyway, I know that like the I think I pronounced that
German
right
cherries.
Is the main one in the Lambic region, you know, the Seine Valley that like is coveted to put in Lambics.
Of course.
But it's like 15 letters long, no vowels in sight.
It's undoable.
And but anyway, yeah, man, it just had the. I'm slowly coming more and more around to cherries because I had in my head such an idea that like cough syrup, I don't like cherries, man. Bad memories, dude. But like any good cherry beer,
huh?
Like, yeah, cherry, you know, not cherries going like, we'll probably taste like that. That's the whole point. Like, there wasn't fucking real cherries in your cough syrup as a kid either. But using actually real cherries, like, there is the fruit flavor for sure, but the thing that puts them on a, in a different place than a lot of fruit is that pit character, because of the ratio of fruit to pit is a lot bigger and the pits are so small, like, that really can come out and you can cyanide poison a lot of people that way. For real, it is something you actually have to be like a little aware of. You would need to put so much cherries in a beer though.
Yeah.
To be over the amount of governmentally allowed, TTB allowed cyanide potential in
to
a
be
beer.
In the murdering phase.
But it is a real thing. That's like, people, I only say it because a lot of people don't know about that at all. Then other people think that it, like, is way easier than it is to, like, cyanide poison someone via beer. Fruited beer. be a cool, it'd be actually a very, very keen way to kill someone.
Why are you in here, man? Oh, robbery. You? Well,
I had to try to poison someone at a homebrew convention with a really heavily peached beer.
Imagine. But,
anyway.
You'd be getting your lunch taken every day.
Pits, though, give off like a ton of complexity in addition to just the fleshy kind of fruit character of just like this nutty kind of almond, sometimes vanilla. It's hard to explain.
Almond,
pit,
I think,
though.
For Eden, we know how little I think of my palate. The almond character for me is A, what I taste and what you're talking about, and B,
is
what
almond.
I find so enjoyable. When we did recently a blueberry beer that I liked. But we did a beer called Amaranth that had that fruit aspect with the cherry with it.
Yeah.
And oh, that to me felt that tiny bit of almond at the back end, what you're calling the pit cherry pit character.
Yeah.
Just made that an entirely different beer and drinking experience and flavor. And it was so fucking good.
Yeah.
If you haven't had Amaranth, go out there and get it, dude.
Yeah. Drink now. For real though, that.
This podcast is brought to you by Bissell Brothers.
Very literally.
Quite literally.
And that's why you don't have to listen to Patreon bullshit. But yeah, so I drank that. That was good. But yeah, I'm slowly drinking less after drinking a lot, like everyone was, it seemed. Not even thinking about it. I'm just drinking way more than I was without really thinking about it. And that's slowly coming back to where I'd like it to be in a, not that it was like going off the rails, like, ugh, every morning I'm drunk by noon, what the fuck? But just like, you know, just not thinking about it and having
so
beer every day
same.
And just not really being conscious about it.
And I've settled into a place where
going back towards like there's days when there's no beer and you just, it's just not the natural thing as much
100%.
As it slowly. It kind of is though also because it's fucking hot.
Yeah.
So on the other end, but anyway, so hopefully I'll have more interesting shit to talk about as we go on forward. But I'll tell you what, hopefully I'll have a surf casting down my gullet sooner rather than later.
May I recommend it in the sun, in your dad's pool, naked. So I did it. Oh, moving on. No, he had I forgot my bathing suit. So I had to borrow one of your dad's bathing suits. And
just a banana hammock.
It's the famous Roman statue. I believe it's Roman or Greek. David, I believe. And you know what the signifier of that statue is?
His penis, his little penis.
It's right on the bathing suit where your penis would be.
Are you serious?
Dead serious. That's what
he owns.
Gave me. He owns one of those. It's amazing.
What?
I'm being dead serious 100%. He goes, have I got the bathing suit for you?
And he's right about that.
And then he handed me
Is it like statue color or is it skin color?
It's like the office, it's an off-green, gross
statue
color.
Yeah.
And it's literally cut right into the crotch, printed. It's the whole suit. It's
cut right into the cloth.
David's nether region and legs coming down, but right where your crotch is in this bathing suit, printed is David's crotch with his little micropenis.
David's dick.
Dick David.
Dick David.
Dick David.
Little Dick David.
Cool. So that's all the time we have for today. But really, get it. And speaking of just kind of surf casting and what we like to drink and to bounce away from the service side, after a couple more technical episodes that have really been helping the listenership and going really well, I thought it'd be a cool idea if you kind of walked through one of your recipes and let me ask the most basic questions for people that are less far down the line to get some understanding, and for you to expound for people that are really homebrewing at a high level every day and creating their own recipes, and to expound on some things that might be helpful for them as well. What do you think about that in the hot seat?
Well, we thought about it together. So I
did just claim
that
as my idea.
You did very much lay your moon flag.
I think by thinking
ground.
About it together, it was very much entirely your idea.
Well, the way I looked at it, as to, you know, reference you, it looked like a hedge against rambling because it's structured. It's a recipe.
It's literally a recipe.
And so I liked that idea of like being able to talk about stuff, but my tendency is just to fucking, well, but then there's this, and then there's this. And
yeah.
I felt like it would be
extrapolation
keep me away
nation.
From that a little. And also just kind of be a good thing for what we've talked about with you. So, yeah, let's hit it. What'd you pick? I did leave the beer open for you. I said no substance, just because we've kind of talked
about
idea. That a lot.
That's what I meant by that. So I had this great idea
of what
to
beer?
Talk about reciprocal.
Reciprocal, okay.
Reciprocal.
Big red.
It's a 7.3 IPA, kind of right on that line of being a
– yep.
On the higher end of an IPA or lower end of a double.
An extra IPA.
Hey, it's featuring three Australian hops. Vic's Secret being the primary what's being
driver,
shown in that
yep.
beer. Ooh, we get a driver drop?
I've been spending
like
way
it.
Too much fucking
a
time
A Ryan Gosling
you.
Drop.
It's movie's called Drive. It's not a Gosling
that's
drop.
That's true. We threw it out there.
If anything, it's an and uncle onsort drop, dude.
Ooh,
baby driver.
Ooh, another great movie. But anyways, it features Vic's Secret. It also has Ella and Summer, which all three are Australian hops. Certainly a staff favorite, one of the very early beers.
Probably number five or six.
Yep. Early on, it's been a staple. It's one of the core.
One of our like five printed cans, something like that.
One of the cores, and kind of dive into recipe there and creating it and different questions within that. But I did want to kind of start in that realm with when we talk core brands and printed cans and Bissell Brothers, that's
core brands and printed cans.
We're talking core brands and printed cans. So much of that, I would have to think impetus and inspiration. It's going to be around hop flavor and hop showcase and very much these are hoppy beers. It's going to be a hop forward.
You're sitting like a hop head right now, dude. You look like you're getting hot and bothered talking hops.
Hops.
Driven by hops.
And
sorry,
I
had to make fun of you a little.
No, so I would imagine, and obviously we get kind of education points and being the people who share these beers with customers and sell them, that very much know there's beers like Here's to Feeling Good All the Time. That was the first time you were able to contract Galaxy. Very much that's going to be the impetus and the inspiration of that beer is getting the most out of Galaxy.
Well, Kramer was the inspiration, but
fair. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. And that's this long-winded question is,
yeah, what is the
that
question?
In reciprocal was that driven by brewing with Vic's Secret for the first time or getting hands on it? Because it's very much not a Citra or a Galaxy or a Mosaic of a hop that everybody's trying to get and everybody's brewing with. What made you want to showcase a beer with Vic's Secret specifically?
So because of how early of a beer that was, I'm trying to think when we would have. It probably would have been like spring of 2015 would, I think, be a pretty accurate guess for when we would have started brewing that.
Yeah.
Something like that. Galaxy's the one you always think of with Australia. But, you know, that was when I was waitlisted for like 4 years on or 2 years, whatever it was. Like
on Galaxy.
Seemingly an impossibly long amount of time.
Yeah.
Not anyone's fault. That was just what it
was.
The
way it was.
But then there's this new hop that I heard about called Vic's Secret that was originally Victoria's Secret, Victoria province or whatever in Australia, obviously. Got that C&D hit on hard by this angel.
No shit,
dude.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the angel slapped him with that.
It was Bella herself. Showed up and served them.
I was trying to think of another.
Couldn't name one.
Couldn't
I'm
name
lucky
one.
I got Bella out quickly because I was about to try to make the joke and flop on a name.
So beautiful, yet I can't think of any. But
well, I think beauty's on the inside, but do what you do.
That's why masks don't matter, man. was billed as having some similar characteristics to Galaxy, but very much being its own thing, which one of the first times ever Hop description was accurate.
Really?
I really liked it. And you know, I've talked about it here and there, but just that hard to define Australian character that's like this rugged kind of flavor, but there's also like this intense level of like fruitiness, but it's also like this almost like licorice-y kind of thing in light amounts that they have a little bit, black licorice kind of thing. Really cool hop and decided to kind of lean fully into the Australian thing with these other little supporting members of that.
Why? It just made sense and made it a cohesive.
We didn't have like wiggle room on hop quantities really. Yeah. Then we would contract a certain amount. We had a small amount of fermenters. So it was, the idea was like, we're going to basically use all of this. Yeah. And then the new contract would come in. So we had it kind of planned out like exactly how much Vic's Secret could go in this beer to be brewed X amount of times this year. So if anything, Ella was easier to get. Summer kind of was, but not really. They're like filler hops almost. Yep. Not just, you know, bland filler. They're similar, you know, they're in the same like family kind of flavor, but to kind of make the Vic's Secret go a little further. And maybe that was just, you know, great foresight, because Scott Janis has talked a lot about sometimes using too much of one variety and you don't get the desired, you know, impact.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that
you want to talk hop heads, calling me a hop head.
He didn't spit into the mic like that talking about him. I know that. Summer is a very small amount. So that was a hop also that was, we got new at the same time. Low alpha, very different than Vic's Secret, kind of build to have a kind of melon character. So we contracted out like a 5 years or something, but small quantities of summer. So now if you look at the recipe, which I know you did, there's like 6 pounds of summer in it, I think 72 of Vic's Secret.
As compared to the 74 Vic's Secret pounds.
And then 22, right, of Ella.
Ella 22, baby. Yep.
That's kind of just trying to use that contract of summer up, because we've stopped renewing that contract.
Because that's adds.
It doesn't add really anything noticeable to the beers, how we felt. It's not taking anything away, but it's not like adding anything.
And real quick, what I saw summer as a, in the way it was.
Plus, you can't use it in the winter, which is frustrating.
Is that a joke? That's pretty good.
Bad joke, but it is a joke nonetheless.
So obviously with beers like that, the hop side obviously comes first. But when it comes to building grain bills for these beers, how much are you pulling on different levers and trying very different things? And are those specific to certain hops and different flavors?
That's a good question. So you'll notice in that beer, there's about 30-35% malted wheat and like 5% flaked oats. When I'm talking about that roughness that sometimes those hops can bring, that's almost to try to kind of pad against that. I really fucking
love... Can you break that all the way down?
Yes.
We use words like toughness and rugged for the
coarse, the inherent character of
these Australian hops.
Yeah.
But when you say... What are you doing that's trying to balance
So with malted wheat, there's just sort of a soft character to it. Yeah, it's grain. Like all grains have a relatively neutral flavor by compared to just that punch you in your nose of like a high alpha Australian hop.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to compare to a base malt in terms of flavor intensity. But malted wheat with the protein composition of it, I just really like the mouthfeel it brings to beers. It's definitely noticeable versus flaked wheat.
Well, that's where I wanted to, and what are those differences between a malted wheat and a flaked wheat in terms of what you get? I got to say something. So
cool.
Gonna,
well, let me just keep, let me finish what I've tried to
say. Just let me keep pre-running your next sentence so I can get something in on this.
It'll be quick, I promise. Then you can go. With that kind of character, it's just a softness that even softer, it's more full than two row, but it is less, it's still just, it's a kind of provide like a soft canvas to almost kind of lessen the intense, the harshness,
that toughness,
tone
that
down
ruggedness
the harshness of the ruggedness of the, that hope those hops can bring is the idea with the grain bill in that beer. And that was honestly one of the more thought through, fully like toiled over grist bills we have in our IPAs for
and
that
to,
reason.
To read right through it, but it main two row, 68%. That wheat, like you talked about, a little less than what you said, 26%. When you get into I only say it to for this
I'm
next
kidding,
part.
Dude.
What you've
it's got, fluctuated also over the years.
Sure.
I'll just say that.
Yeah.
All these recipes, you know, I'll change shit
He's
here and there, and then
But 3% Karastan, which is a crystal malt,
which you should know by now. My favorite crystal malt.
Yeah.
That English hitter.
And well, to finish that, 3% of that, 2% of flaked oats. To talk Karastan, do see it.
Let's talk Karastan, baby.
Talking Karastan, baby. But we do have it on a lot of our,
beverages.
In the grain bills for a lot of our beers. Is it always in such small percentage? I believe it's in precious fragments, correct?
Yeah. So it'd
is it in a bigger percentage as the beers get darker?
Yeah. But generally, if you're really trying to make a beer darker, it's more efficient to add that in addition to an even darker crystal malt.
Yeah.
You'd have to add a lot of Karastan. And at that point, because any crystal malt has a much higher flavor intensity than a base malt, a small percentage, I mean, the 3% in that, it would be a slightly different, you'd probably notice it a little bit if it was gone, even though it's only 3%. I don't think the oats would be noticed as much at that rate, but I think that the Karastan, like, you would notice something's different. You wouldn't be able to place it, but it'd be like, yeah, something's weird about this, or different about this. So like 6% doubling that, adding another bag. So that's the other thing. At professional, it's all based on bags or maybe half bags sometimes. Yep. But you're never going to be like, I'll add 31 pounds of it just because then you have a fucking bag with 24 pounds open oxidizing in it.
Yeah,
you know, it's just not what you want.
No.
So it's basically bag or half bag is like the quantities of anything.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's real odd, maybe you'd like a super black malt you're adding for just a hair of color, you could maybe salt bay like a few pounds in that, and that would just be kind of the bag you have on hand to do that with. But anyway,
And what you say in such small quantity to move, then you've got oats, flaked oats at the smallest percentage in that grain bill at 2%.
It's called arbitrary.
Well, that's what I'm asking. What is the intention for that? And does it get to a point where at such small percentage, you really aren't getting anything noticeable out of it? Or it's
well,
there.
Well, like I said,
so
I don't
like
think
you'd
notice if oats were gone.
Yeah.
But they used to be a higher proportion. But also it's like as beers evolve and you're really happy with them, why would I take the oats out?
Completely.
You know, it's like, well, this is tasting better than it ever has from other changes. But like, why even potentially jeopardize that by removing one of the pieces of the puzzle?
Yeah.
For no really good. It's not like there's an oat shortage. You know, we always have plenty of them. Like, yeah.
Totally. And what I've always found, we talk about it with wheat, and I do find that. But in...
Find what?
Wheat was used for some of the softness of the. We're gonna fly right past the gluten intolerance joke and go right to.
I'm killing it today, brother.
You said the softness to kind of counteract some of that ruggedness. What I found in beers that I'm drinking lately, primarily, and
you know your surf castings.
No, but in hoppy beers, when I look back at and check one out after I drink it, And primarily
like
other,
the stats
other
of
half
it.
Is yeah, looking into like what it other half has been a lot of this for me. And I haven't had a ton, but a good amount that the beers that I really, really like, the beers that are noticeable enough for me to go back and check it out. Cause there's a ton that I don't. I do see oats in them a lot, and I always feel like there's a big softness in those beers that are part of why I'm liking them. What is the simple Cliff Notes intention of what flaked oats do in a grain bill or oats different ways?
Basically adding beta glucans, which are just like a gummy type of protein that oats have much more of than most any other grain. And to my knowledge, Scott Janis can check it. And that just adds like literal body weight.
Yeah.
Literal weight is being added in the beer. However, like I have said, like it's hairy how truly important they are as the one shining thing. So those beer, I think that might be a lot of times a coincidence that those
and
are the beers.
If I notice it once, then I'm looking for it and I'm like, oh, yep, there's the oats again. That's why I like
I think
this.
It's more reflects a brewing philosophy of terms of how those beers would be made rather than the silver bullet of the reason.
Yeah.
I think it would more just be indicative of the greater approach to brewing, you know.
Absolutely. So, and to keep it moving down the recipe, you have your grain bill, the hops that have kind of inspired you to make the beer, the grain bill that you're going to use to put these hops on to create a cohesive thing and exemplify their flavors well, and to really bring it to Scott Janis territory, hot side, cold side, and how you implement them. What was the thought there with reciprocal?
Since it's mostly Vic's Secret, that's a pretty simple one. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a whole lot of playing around. Like, Ella is not in the hot side. It's Summer's only hot side because of the low alpha.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of old school mentality. Sorry, Scott Janis. Of keeping bitterness down that way.
Yep.
And Reciprocal's a beer that, even with all those, considerations made, it does taste good right off the line.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, 2 weeks is like when that beer like kind of settles into itself just because of that coarseness kind of thing that I haven't found a way to get past in Australian hops particular. But did that answer your question? I don't even really quite remember what it was.
The implementation of the hot side, cold side. And
so Ella's only in the cold to higher alpha to hit it on that side to try to make less bitterness. And I also like Ella a lot better in my relatively small experience. But again, this recipe has, you know, within what you look at now, you know, changed at margins of 10% plus on every facet of it, you know, in terms of any one factor in that could have been significantly different at any portion in time.
Yes.
The spirit of the beer has not changed at all. And the general things of like, it's a Vic Secret IPA
with
a good amount of weed in it. That has not changed. But with Ella, like we played around with having a lot more of that in the hot side. And I like that. It does something about the adding it in dry hop, like way favors fruitiness more than a lot of other hops versus in that hot side, it very much you get that kind of that licorice kind of thing, which it isn't bad. It's just a unique thing that's a little too unique.
Yeah.
When especially in that kind of beer, you know. So that's why dry hop only for Ella to try to favor more that kind of melony kind of
Totally makes sense
sort of thing. And then for other levers, I mean, obviously, we could go into this a ton. I know we do need to get over there pretty soon.
We got about 7 minutes
till
we open up this thing, baby.
This podcast will last longer than that. I'm going to say that right now from experience. But the other ones, I'll kind of be a breeze over them. You got water salts. How you approach those? Honestly, that's such a hairy territory. I feel like it's not even worth going down.
And
generally, I've over time have leaned into less and less water salts, honestly.
Huh.
And in a beer like this too, that extra kind of the old school mentality is you in beers that you are trying to soften You add more calcium chloride. This beer is one of them that shows that. You can definitely do that too much. And also, if you're not doing it too much, I'm not sure how much it's doing in the first place.
Really? There's
very much differing opinions on that, yeah, though. And I don't even have a strong enough of one to put my stake in the ground. Yeah. But there's just so much mineral contribution from the malt, you know, that it once you realize that, it kind of makes doing all the calculations of how much salt you're actually adding, but then not thinking about what minerals are going to be adding what at all. Yeah. It kind of makes you feel like, why am I even fucking doing this? Yeah. If it's all a crapshoot anyway. And it wouldn't have to be a crapshoot. You could analyze each malt and get a rough baseline for what they'd all be adding to the table.
Sure.
You wouldn't ever quite know the actual extraction level.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't have plans of doing that ever. So less, I kind of just keep going to a simpler approach on salts.
Right.
It is double dry hopped, a simple double dry hopping schedule of the same dry hopping in, you know, two additions at one, you know, with a few gravity points left of fermentation, then one a day or two after that, where we then cap, and then that beer would be under pressure until it is hits the canning line,
yeah,
basically.
Which is
it
how
comes
long?
Out of the 2 weeks from that, Yep. So it's about a 3 week beer in total. So that'd be 2 weeks from that about. And then fermentation profile also pretty low key. What are the yeast? You have the recipe right there. What do we, so we do all our yeast pitching in pounds.
Yep.
That's after it started in pounds from in the early days of not fucking having any way to cell counting seems very scary. So it was just pound baseline pounds, reading about it like, okay, that should work. You get results that work enough.
Yeah.
The thing is, when your harvests, those can be variable of how much your what the cell density of a given slurry is. So you're ballparking it. However, since then we've gotten a lot of data on what our slurries have, and also our process has gotten a lot more consistent. So we've continued to go with pounds, but it's been much more informed.
Huh.
So pounds is the shorthand rather than we pitch it at this many cells.
Because
that's a lot of work to pitch exclusively by cell count.
You'd
have to have a lot of yeast to be able to pull from so you could exactly. And you'd probably have to have a density meter or something to even really know, ensure that's what you were getting.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, a yeast propagator where the yeast slurry is constantly being spun.
Yeah.
So anyway, pounds, we go, what is the pitching rate for 20 barrels?
What'd you say, for 20 or 40?
Either.
For 40 barrels, it's 140 pounds.
So 70 pounds per 20.
Yeah.
So that is slightly on the higher rate, but it's a higher gravity beer. Yeah, so honestly, fermentation and yeast is pretty
standard.
Pretty standard, but that's been played around with a lot in this beer. And again, it's boring, but it has been, you know, tinkering excessively for many years and continuing to do so.
Yeah.
But on beers like this that have been around for a while, the small whirlwind of owning a brewery, kind of, they feel like they've been fucking there forever. You get into a place where how long are you going to keep playing with this? At some point playing with it, it comes at the beer's expense. If you're so obsessed with keeping the toy with something, just because like it almost becomes habit rather than driven by new information you receive that you want
time to tinker again.
Like, well, I guess I got to tinker. it's Tuesday. I better tweak this recipe. So that slowed down a lot because that usually comes also with like, well, tasting the beer, like, I'm not really, not that this is like, this beer is perfect, but for what it's supposed to be within all the things, like, I can't think of really anything that I am aware of at this moment that this beer is like, glaringly lacking. It's like I'm pretty fucking happy with it, so let's restrain myself and not like double the carostano and 2 a.m on impulse.
Let's bump the oats up to 2.14.
right
Well, there it
so,
is.
So, yeah.
And that's how you brew the perfect beer.
Simplicity, maybe, and doing it many times. But I think for real, we're a little rushed today. But yeah. I think for real,
well,
down
next
the line,
week we're going to get into water salts and fermentation times and yeast cell counts.
In all seriousness, though, for other beers, that would be a bigger conversation. With this particular one, it isn't as much of one. But with other beers, that's a bigger consideration for one reason or another. And I think that the template of this has potential, you know, to achieve kind of what we're looking to do.
So if you
feedback on how you felt about this.
Also leave a rating.
Yep. Please. Leave a rating either way.
But true feedback. If you enjoyed this and made it to this far into the episode, that means.
And if you don't like it, also tell us. That's fine too.
Hell yeah.
We have no ideas waiting, but we can think of them. We can figure it out.
Yeah, at Graining In Pod, DM us. That's where we see the most, and let us know as we continue to try to make these solos bearable.
Yes.
And speaking of it, and getting out of here and opening up this tap room for the second time, we've got a three bay real quick. I got one for you. Three famous Australians, pair them with the three hops and reciprocal. It only makes sense.
All right, man.
Hugh Jackman.
Yes.
Got to do it to him. Wolverine. Crocodile Dundee. I mean, of course.
What's that guy's name?
It's a good question.
Yeah, probably should. It's Paul something.
Let me give you, so while I'm looking that up, it's going to be Hugh Jackman.
Paul something.
Nicole Kidman.
Oh, and Paul something.
And Crocodile Dundee, real name.
Paul something. Picture if his name was actually Paul something.
Paul Hogan.
Yes, Paul Hogan. Paul Hogan, yes.
Paul Hogan. Yes,
Paul something.
So Nicole Kidman, Hugh Jackman, Paul something, Paul Hogan, Ella Summer, Vic Secret.
All right, Ella. I'm going to hit Hugh Jackman with the Ella. Jackman's umbrella. And that's because, you know, Hugh Jackman is famous, quite famous. But he isn't like...
Crocodile
I would argue
Dundee
that he's not
famous.
Iconic. He isn't the face of Australia. Frankly, a lot of people don't know he's from Australia. Yeah. I may or may not have been one of them before you asked me that question.
Oh, you think I should? What, you think I should have said Russell Crowe, dude?
Well, same way with actors. It's tough because their whole job is not speaking that way.
Yeah, true.
So it's easy to forget. Like, I've only seen Hugh Jackman. At worst, speaking a kind of English accent for like a movie like The Prestige.
Yeah.
Like that's just kind of old America.
Great movie.
Shout out David Bowie as Nikola Tesla. and Scarlett Johansson as
Paul Giamatti.
Come on, dude. You're thinking of the fucking.
No.
Whatever. Yes, there's two magic movies came out.
The Edward Norton.
You're thinking of the shitty
Edward
one.
Movie.
Yeah, naturally.
Shitty. It's not as good as The Prestige.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not. That
shitty
is not
by comparison.
The Illusionist.
The Illusionist.
Not a shitty movie by any stretch.
Well, shitty by comparison.
Well, shitty to derail this with a Paul Giamatti from a different movie reference.
That was you. That was on you.
Okay,
that was on you. Fuck, man. Not even going to have a good day now. What was the fucking question? No. Hugh Jackman as Ella, though. Sorry to everyone out there. Because Ella is, you know, a hop I like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this beer isn't based around Ella.
No.
Nor is Australian culture. Or, more importantly, Americans' understanding of Australian culture.
Here he comes.
Well, you know, for obvious reasons.
It makes
sense. It's serviceable, solid, but isn't. The thing.
And that means that Vic's Secret is going to be.
Well, hold on. I'm going to switch that up. I probably should have reordered these. First, I'm going to throw the curveball in, though, with Summer. Let us not forget Summer.
Yeah.
Summer, this is a pretty rudimentary application of these facts. But, you know, low alpha, it's a more elegant hop than either the two other ones.
Mm-hmm.
It is almost too elegant to even be in a beer. That's a double dry hopped American IPA, frankly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's really the reason. Like, this isn't doing anything in this. Yeah. It would be doing something in a fucking single hop, like, you know, Blonde Ale or Pilsner, like something that just it could, or even dry hopping like a Saison with Summer or something. Like, you would get the character of it then. But it just kind of gets lost in the shuffle here. Because it is like it's refined. It's elegant. It could be in Eyes Wide Shut.
with a mask on.
Right. So that's going to be Nicole Kidman. There, you know, she's just that elegant piece, you know, that if there was still like a queen system in Australia, which I think there kind of might be. There used to be not that long ago, for sure. Nicole Kidman, good candidate for that.
I'm buying it.
For a Meghan Markle, Kate, whatever her name is, type of character.
Yeah, Kate Middleton.
Fuck, at this point, Nicole Kidman's the goddamn queen, dude. She's the matriarch at this point of Australia. I'm going to go out there and say it. Lay down the gauntlet.
The places we have gone.
And then, obviously, Paul Hogan. I'd have to imagine a lot of people in Australia fucking hate that Crocodile Dundee even exists.
That's not even what we'll... Never mind.
Yeah, never mind indeed. You know, it's just a character of Australian outback culture, kind of. Mm. And then, like, fish out of water thing is that's supposed to be funny. He's the face of Australia for some people. Like, that aren't educated.
Like myself.
Yeah. For other people, you know, Vic's Secret, like, if you have a very small worldview of hops and beers, like, that might be the only Australian hop, you know.
There it is.
And if you was the only one you were going to know, it would be, you could pick worse.
Yeah.
So.
I'm buying it.
I'm fucking buying
You're
it
selling
big
it.
Time.
You're selling
I'm
it.
I'm selling it.
And I'm buying
it. Yeah, and that's the stock market for you.
Ooh, baby.
That's the stock market of three bays.
Stay tuned next week when we talk about Robinhood and options trading
with Rob Todd
and Tesla with Rob Todd.
With the Robinhood of beer.
We'll be back with a guest next week for real, and we've got a few guests coming. Thank you for listening.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Yep. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden, it will all become lovely. The flower that opens.